For July the 4th, 2025, we talk about The Altars, Songs of Conquest, Affinity, and much more. Welcome to Level 549. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Woot! I'm here.
Yeah. Ben was getting ready for a trip, I think. If we didn't just miss a week, I probably would have called this week off, but I'm happy you all are here.
Yeah, I have a story to tell you.
Yeah, tell it.
I mean, oh yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Dennis. You said something.
No, I was going to do a dumb bit. It won't be relevant anymore.
Okay, well, so over one of the weekends when I was away, I don't remember when that was anymore. Time means nothing. We went to go see Nate Jackson, comedian Nate Jackson. If you've never seen Nate Jackson, you should go check out some of his stuff. He does crowd work and he is hilarious. And I have never seen a comedian that I am laughing the entire time that they are on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was laughing and so was Dave the entire time we were watching this, like when we went to go see him live, and it was great. And I realized that we were about 5 minutes away from this vinyl listening bar called Off the Record here in Houston. And I
Excellent.
Was like, oh, name. That sounds great, because it's actually behind a record store. It's a record store, and then behind that is the vinyl listening bar, and then they have DJs, and like that on that evening, like Saturday nights, they do an R&B, funk, disco, and hip-hop night. And I'm like, well, that sounds like it's gonna cover like my bases and also some of Dave's bases, so because mm-hmm. he loves funk. So I was like, okay, that sounds cool, let's go. Well, on the way there, like we got over there, we parked nearby, walked over there, about 5 feet away from the doorman, the bottom of my shoe fell off.
Okay.
Fell the fuck off my foot. I'm like, what the hell? So I have like one sole and one shoe with no sole on it. And I'm looking at it and it has like fabric underneath, and it's basically like a little slipper at this point.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, maybe I can make this work. I just have to be very careful. <You know? laughs> And I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and try to go in. And then it turns out they also had a dress code that they didn't have on their website. And so Dave happened to be wearing some flip-flops because he had a pair of shorts on that didn't match the one pair of dress shoes he has. So he ended up not being able to go in. So we got over there and we parked. We paid $20 for parking and my shoe fell apart. And then we were kicked out because Dave had flip-flops on. So sometime soon we will have to go shoe shopping so that we can go get a shoe that will not fall the fuck apart. And then something that's not flip flops.
That's
so we can go to this fucking bar.
I've got your angle. You don't even need to do anything. You are a vinyl purist, and you believe that when you listen, you want to have your feet on the ground and bare, so you can get the full acoustic experience absorbed through every element of your body.
They call it snaking. That's how snakes hear.
That's right.
Yeah.
And tell anyone who would try to stop you from going in that they are fucking posers and don't understand and have no business running a vinyl listening bar.
You can't even comprehend the warmth that I'm hearing in this vinyl, feeling in this vinyl. Sorry.
Well, here's the thing, too. This is a black-owned business. I'm not about to tell these kind black people who have this record listening bar with all of this cool music that they don't know what they're doing.
I was so ready to be angry at you. And now you're aspirational.
I'm not going to do that to those folks.
The angle I was going to go with is your both of your footwear was like a negative inverse of each other. His was just the bottom and yours was just the top.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit of parody there.
Well, I just shared in the backstage just a screenshot of the cool wall that has all the speakers on it at the retro sessions, and then also the exterior of the little building, because we never got to go inside the record listening bar. So,
oh my gosh.
But that's okay. We will get better shoes. Then we will walk our asses back across that street to go.
So fun fact, Broken Flip Flop, the inspiration for Margaritaville.
There you go.
he pitched it to his agent. It's like, no, you can't just write a song about having a mildly inconvenient stay.
Oh, man. One time, it was like 15 years ago, my cousin was getting married. They were having an outdoor wedding on a golf course, and my dad and I were walking up to it together, and apparently he had not worn those shoes in a while, because we just both kind of noticed, like, hey, Dad, why are you, like, leaving, like, big black tracks behind you? As he was walking, like, the bottoms of his shoes, like the rubber of the soles, was like coming off like a racer, like it completely disintegrated.
Wow.
So, like, he had to rush back to his house. Like, I rode with him, like, rush back to his house to, like, put on other shoes so he could make it to the ceremony.
Well, you know how they always have, like, the obvious footprints in the gumshoe.
That's how it happens. Yeah.
That's how they do them.
Uh-huh.
Well, and so I do have to say, to circle back to the doorman, felt bad.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like, if you have any other shoes in your car, any other shoes. But no, we were in my car. There were no other shoes to be had.
Sure.
Like, how do you feel about trading for flip-flops for a couple hours?
Right. I just want to go in and have a drink and just look around the bar once. That's all.
Yeah.
So. Anyway.
Yeah, that is a fun story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, Moxie, how about you?
Not a whole lot. Went in, got drinks yesterday with, some friends I made at the, local protest. So that was kind of cool.
Cool.
And then other than that, just prepping for, as you might imagine, 4th of July is very big around here.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of getting prepared for all that.
Cool. Like, what does the prep entail? Like, what are you planning on doing?
Oh, well, I'm having some family visit. So,
oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Cleaning and stuff like that.
God.
Not like buying shit tons of fireworks.
No, I don't even know. Like, there's no way that's legal in DC. But at the same time, like, is there a law against that? Like,
probably.
I don't know. Like,
anymore.
I've been in major cities before, like Chinese New Year in San Francisco contains approximately all of the fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a thing, but again, I doubt the, like, Secret Service would be particularly pleased with people, you know, setting off fireworks on the mall or whatever.
I think it'd get a little bit jumpy. Damn. Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, enjoy your time with your family when they come out.
Mm-hmm.
No. Mm-hmm. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go full on dad again.
Okay.
And share. My youngest, Barrett, is starting to really try out new vocabulary.
Okay.
Okay.
Not in the cuss word way, which is also fun, but he's just, like, you know, really hauling off on some big words here.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing with marble works and accidentally knocked over a tower. And he goes, "Oh, knocked off my calibrations." and he threw in, what was it? He loves saying voila.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, it's just fun. And has also taken up, unfortunately, It's like his actually.
Okay. So
he's happy. He's happy to correct you on things, and unfortunately, we're going to do it this way now.
Oh no!
But probably my favorite new big word this week is a word for big, which is gigantic.
Okay.
This did, however, show up as I came to see him on the potty, and he goes, "Dad, how big a hole does your butt make? Is it gigantic?"
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, really, really tough to not just immediately fall on the ground laughing with that. But it is a fun stage for him to be in, trying out new words.
Oh, that's cute. Mm-hmm. That is very cute.
And I don't know if we want to talk about Pride Weekend here.
Yeah, that's literally all that I had. That's why I put yours next to mine.
Sweet. Alley-oop.
Yeah, Dennis and family came up to Mansfield for Pride. I was a little bit confused as to why you would come up, because I'd never been there. It's not an especially big Pride or anything, but I was still grateful that you did. It was a lot of fun. It had been forever since I had seen Jen. Mm-hmm. Basically a little bit less than a year since I've seen the kids. So, you know,
yeah, I guess September.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I guess it was that. Yeah. So, no, it was a good time, you know, not the hugest like actual like festival or anything, but you know, there was a lot of stuff for the kids. And so we mostly kind of hung around and talked while they did that. The various bouncy attractions, the bouncy castle, the bounce course, the bouncy
all axe things throwing. Balloon adjacent were
yeah,
present.
Yeah. But the kids seemed like they had a good time, and I got to take you all to the place when you are like from out of town and come to Mansfield, the Coney Island restaurant downtown. So
yeah, now when I get asked Skyline or Gold Star, I've got a better answer.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the Coney's the Coney's are great because there's actually consistency to the chili sauce, as opposed to just being loose brown.
Yes, slurry is never quite what you want to go for.
Yeah,
in your meals.
If you tried to pass it through a small filter, there would be separation, as opposed to it just comes through unharmed. Fucking Cincinnati.
You would not need a gigantic hole to eat most of the Skyline or Gold Star. But
I mean, I don't know if it's going to fix that problem, but it's still chilly.
It is. Yes.
Yeah. But it was a good time. And like based on the kids' energy, you guys probably left at a good time. How was the ride home?
Oh, we timed it so perfectly. Did you get hit with rain later in the day?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
Okay, because that we were driving, you know, down 71. I feel like everyone's clocked where we are by now, so I don't feel bad mentioning.
We mentioned town names.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know, driving down 71, and you could literally see like the curtain of rain, or I should say more like a wall, because when we hit it, it felt like just like a wall of water that we drove into, and just absolutely, you know, everyone had. Excuse me. Everyone had their hazard blinkers on, and just one of those. But thankfully, when it comes down that hard, it can never come down for long. So we were out the other side pretty quickly. But yeah, we timed it perfectly for kid energy levels, for weather stuff, and yeah, Mansfield just feels. I think that's the first time we've come out as like a day trip, and it worked pretty well.
Nice. Yeah. No. It was really nice seeing you all. I got home and I just crashed. Go ahead, Jella.
I have a story about my niece very briefly, if anybody wants to toss to me when you're done. That's all.
Yeah, I don't have anything else.
Okay, my niece is turning 12 and she's gonna be down here for her birthday, and this is gonna be my first time to see her in like 5 years. So like I have not seen her since she was little, right? So
oh, dang.
So, you know, like I'm gonna be taking her to Moody Gardens with Dave and, you know, like all this other stuff along with her brother. And So, like, I was trying to figure out something to get her for her birthday, and my sister says, oh, she plays a bunch of survival horror games. She plays Dandy's World and Garden of Banban and Poppy's World and Five Nights at Freddy's and a bunch of other, and I didn't realize there were this many horror games for children. But there are. And so I looked up Dandy's World because that's the one she's the most into right now. And then I'm like, Erica, there's like 700 characters. You know, this is my sister's name. I'm like, so which one of these characters does she like? I can get a plush or something or whatever, but I need to know, you know, which one.
And you're
then,
right.
So she had no idea. So then she's like, like she disappears. She's like, oh, I'll ask her tonight when she gets home. Well, then suddenly I get a call in the evening from my niece herself. And I'm like, oh, and Erica, my sister, was like, oh, I just told her that you were interested in the game. And so now she's calling to tell you about it. And I'm like,
Oh, boy.
So I'm in the room hanging out with Dave. And then my niece calls. And then she's like, so then when you load up into the thing to your left, blah, blah, blah. And like, she's giving me like a walking tour of how to start playing the game. Like, she's going off about this for a while, right? And I'm like, well, what character, like after 20 minutes, like, what character do you play? And then I figured it out. I'm like, okay, so okay, that's the one I'm going to get the plush of. Great. And then she wandered off into telling us about how the fandom sucks because they all do a lot of weird things. They ship weird characters together.
Yeah,
true
gamer
experience.
That's just fandom. Yeah, you're going to have to learn that eventually.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and then she's like, I'm on Reddit, and I was reading the subreddit, and, you know, like, these people have stupid questions. Like, judging all the stupid questions in Reddit, and then, like, telling me about bugs that she found in the games and how entertaining those are to her.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, a whole bunch of other stuff. And I'm just like, this is absolutely awesome. This, and you don't have to say a word. This kid will just go a mile a minute. So, you know, we're just sitting here, and like every once in a while, when she stops to breathe for a second, Dave or I will like interrupt and be like, you know, like Dave was like, so what characters do you ship? Because he was just curious. I'm like, come on. And then she's like,
don't do this to me.
Well, and then she's like,
I mean, that's an important question.
Well, she's like, I don't ship any of them. That's weird.
Like, oh, it's all like a, you know, pansexual fuckfest in their harem kind of deal. Yeah, you can't ship any of them because they're all together. Duh. Right,
whatever. So anyway. See,
For a moment with Five Nights at Freddy's being in there, I thought it was going to be like, yeah, the fandom's kind of weird. There's a whole bunch of dudes that like to dress up in dresses.
So it was just very, very funny to me. And so now, like, and also she's like in her goth phase. So like all of her gifts from my sister are from Hot Topic or something.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, her favorite color is black. I'm like, okay,
cool.
Here we go. So
that's, I'm like, fun.
Okay, buckle up, sister. Buckle up for being the mother to this child as she goes into teenhood.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She's going to be 12.
Okay. Yeah, maybe so. When she's a little older, I recommend Video Vision. It's a great goth band, but they get into a lot of like politics and like the horrors of war and stuff
right
like that.
Now,
that
her
might
favorite
be a
musician.
Bit much for
right now, her favorite musician is not goth at all. It's Billie Eilish. No. So whatever.
I mean, I don't know. I definitely that indicates some good taste.
So anyway, sorry to tell multiple stories in the same banter, but I had to share that while I was thinking about it, because that was too good.
That is,
well, now we have momentum. We have to go around again. So
definitely, no.
The host needs another story.
No, we need to talk about games.
Okay.
And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show. What with the grinds, the multiplayer, and the unboss, and why don't we get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you.
All right, so I'll kick it off by telling you that I am replaying Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc.
That's the first one, right?
Yes. And I am replaying it for the first time since 2016.
I didn't tell you to do that.
If folks really want to hear me generally really like it, but then take issue with the tropey nature of those characters and then lose my mind and inform everyone at the end that I almost was going to throw my Vita, then listen to the entire arc of me playing that game from 2016. You can find it on the level.
Are you playing it on Vita again?
No, I'm not. I'm playing it on my Steam Deck. So
yeah.
Just because my Vita is kind of messed up.
Yeah.
It's messing up. Like the hardware is starting to give out. So.
It stops being able to actually start games.
Right. So it stops being able
to start is a big problem.
Yeah. Stopping being able to start is an issue. So, the characters don't chafe as much as they did a decade ago, likely because I've played enough Spike Chunsoft games in the last decade to build a tolerance. I will say that likely...
Well, that's hell of an endorsement.
Well, I mean, like, remember that the whole thing about me playing Danganronpa was that I was raging. I was like, I would like it, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is pretty good, but blah, and then just be on a rage fest about it for a little while. So, like the major love-hate vibes. Anyway, very likely if I'd been watching anime that had been coming out at the time that Danganronpa the game came out, I would have been probably fine and also had a tolerance. But I haven't watched like anime that has come out since basically Full Metal Alchemist or maybe D. Gray Man. So a very, very long time ago. Is the last time that I watched anything that was actually current and coming out at that time.
Yeah.
So I have not had the tolerance for this kind of thing for a while. I remember who all dies and parts of the class trials, but not all the details.
Mm-hmm.
So once I get to those class trials and those details are revealed, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Because anyway, there's a lot of like twisting and winding to get to the conclusion that you know. Yeah.
Right. So this game was released originally on the PSP in 2010. In 2016, I played it on my Vita, as I mentioned. I'm currently halfway through and I'm playing on my Steam Deck this time. I think I mentioned that already. So portable is the best way for this game.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And basically any visual novel I feel that way about. Like I don't want to sit at my computer desk for that. You know,
no, it feels alien.
Right. I mean, like it's a little bit like, you know, like the portable handheld version is so much better for things that you want to relax in bed with, at least to me. Like I never play my portable devices on like a larger screen. Mm-hmm. So because people are like, oh, don't most people use their Switch on a big screen? I'm like, I have never plugged in my Switch to a big screen. I only ever use my Switch in my hand. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, that's on other shows, me and Gary joke, like, oh, yeah, no, the Switch is great for playing games on the go, by which I mean in bed.
Right. So anyway, any questions about me replaying Danganronpa? I don't want to belabor what is this game and how does it play? I've talked about that in detail 10 years ago, but I did talk about it before.
So. I didn't realize that there was like one specific way through. I thought it was like,
multiple an Until Dawn
thing where who dies depends on like the choices you make and stuff.
Oh no. It's a fixed story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It doesn't do like an LA Noire thing where you can fail and then it's just, because like the character who did the killing needs to be killed in turn.
Yeah. I remember the game just being extensively tutorialized, like, so many and so long tutorials for things that really didn't need it. Was that burdensome? Was it helpful to have the reminders? Like, were you able to just kind of skip through those parts?
That's funny that you say that because I hate tutorials with a deep, deep passion, but these tutorials, there were not very many and they were just introducing new things during the first class trial. And that's it.
Really?
And it wasn't extensive or frustrating or anything like that. So
okay, yeah, I don't remember being like, oh my god, we're doing a tutorial again, but
Well, I mean, like that first class trial, they you know, have you do one little debate, and then they have a tutorial to tell you about the next thing that they're layering in, because they're layering in different elements, but they're not putting them all on you at one time. So throughout that class trial, there are a bunch of little tutorials, but they're pretty, really, really brief. So,
Okay. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, and felt appropriate. And I will also say that trying to put those comic strips together at the end, that made me so mad and frustrated the first time I played it. Mm-hmm. This time, probably because I've played all three Danganronpas before, and so like I'm accustomed to doing this. Mm-hmm. I had no problem whatsoever on any of them so far.
Oh, wow.
So now that I know how to play these games, they're not a problem, surprising nobody. But
are you going, like, do you think that you're going to just continue through the series, like play all three of them, or?
Maybe after a break. I mean, like, yeah. I just played two spinoffs back to back, and then now I'm playing the first one again. So, right. Like, I'm probably going to take a break before I go back to two and three, but I'm pretty sure I will go back to all three of them.
Nice.
I don't know if that means that I will also then circle back to Zero Escape. Probably not. I probably would, if I were to go ahead and replay other games that it's been a long time since I played, I'd probably go back to Steins Gate first.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I thought you were going to say you're just going to play Shining Force again.
Well, I'm kind of perpetually playing Shining Force. I thought you knew that.
The forever game, of course. Mm-hmm. Danganronpa was on my mind this week. I am watching Dr. Stone with my kids. Mm-hmm. It's like an anime about, you know, rebuilding civilization. And the main character's dad is named Byakuya. And so the first time they said it, I was like, oh, and my kids were like, what is that? And I was like, never mind.
yeah. Just...
but it's really funny because he's like a very like social and kind person, the exact opposite of Byakuya in the Danganronpa games.
Right.
He eventually gets there.
In his own way, sure.
I will say that Toko, even though I like Toko in the spinoff Ultra Despair Girls, she's really annoying in the first game where she appears. She's not quite as annoying as the first time that I played it, because again, like, I have tolerance for this type of stuff now. Mm-hmm. But moving along, I've got a few other ones to talk about. The next one is Nina Aquila, Legal Eagle, Chapter 4, Sacred Feathers. So I did mention Nina. Yeah, it's a whole lot of name, isn't it? So it's just like the series name, Nina Aquila, Legal Eagle, and then Chapter 4 is the installment. And so I played Season 1 back in February, I believe it was, and I talked about it back in February of this year. So Season 1 is Chapters 1, 2, and 3. The newest installment of the game came out, I think it was at the end of May. And so I streamed it, you know, like the first couple of hours that weekend. And then I've also streamed it a couple more times since. And this is a fun, you know, continuation of the series. This one is the one that has like the courtroom procedural stuff like Ace Attorney, but it's also an adventure game. It has other types of game elements mixed into it, depending upon what the theme is for the chapter. Because right. Each one of these chapters is stylized after a different type of anime. So, like, there's a chapter where you have a Yu-Gi-Oh! Basis for it. So, like, you've got cards and you have them fighting, you know, like, you have monsters fighting, you know, each other on a stage, and you're playing a card game and battling your monsters together. And then there's, like, you know, the Initial D one where you're racing, drag racing on a mountain. Mm-hmm. And this one is the magical girl themed one. So, Moxie, you've popped in for this. I think, Dennis, you popped in as well at some point. This one has beat 'em up sections where you have sections where you transform into a magical girl at a certain point in the storyline. Hmm. And, you know, there's reasons, of course, for how this lawyer becomes a magical girl. But she becomes a magical girl and is fighting off these demons that are real, because basically magical girls are real. There's a magical girl show where the character that plays like the lead is actually a magical girl, like a real magical girl. And the stories for the show that she makes, where she's playing herself as a magical girl, are based on her history, like her past, past war that she's had with the evil world or whatever of Niflheim. So, anyway, it's really fun. It's amazing because even though it's made in RPG Maker, somehow Ethan Fox, the creator, has put beat 'em up sections in there. Now, granted, it's not like you have jumps and you have special moves and things like that. It's a real basic version of a beat 'em up, but it's a beat 'em up in an RPG Maker game. What even is that? I mean, like having the card battle in an RPG Maker game, and then having the racing game in the RPG Maker game.
Was the racing game real time, or was that like a turn based thing?
It was a turn-based thing. Okay. So it was a turn-based thing, and it did not play out the way that you might expect a racing game to play out. And I'll just leave it like that. You need to play it. It's very fun. So anyway, I've played 3 2-hour sessions so far as of the time of this recording, but I have another session coming up between the time we're recording and the time that this releases. So according to the Steam page, this is a 6+ hour long game. So since I've already played 6 hours, now that's because I'm reading aloud and I'm stopping to talk to people as I'm streaming this. So, some of that time is because I'm streaming. I should possibly be at the end of it. I might be able to finish it the next time that I stream. So by the time this episode drops and you're listening to this, I might have finished my stream. You can look at the VODs on Twitch at Jolichon. You can also go to my YouTube. I will have everything archived there as well at Jolichon as well. This is same quality as the rest of it, but this is also significantly longer because my playtime for the first 3 chapters, that is what is released on Steam as season 1, was 11 hours total for all 3 of the first chapters.
Oh, wow.
This one chapter is 6+, like I'm already at 6 hours and still going. So, of course, again, like I wasn't reading aloud and talking to people in chat and stuff when I was, doing the season 1. I was just doing that, reading silently to myself in playing in bed. So, there is a little bit of padding on my current playtime for chapter 4. So. Mm-hmm.
So do each of the chapters have your adorable sidekick?
Which adorable sidekick do you mean? There's
the green-haired biker.
Oh, the green-haired biker guy, Dylan. Yes. Oh, by the way, I also did very terrible Arnold impressions at the end of my last stream. So that would be stream number 3 of Nina Aquila. I did take some clips. So if you want to dig around on my Twitch and look at my clips,
can you give us just a sample right here?
No.
Example?
No.
There are certain situations in which you just naturally fall into it and nobody could blame you, but manufacturing it is a fucking nightmare.
His name is Dylan, okay? I had a flashback to Predator screaming Dylan. Because at that time, Nina is screaming Dylan. So, so it and then says, Dylan, get down. Come on. This is perfect.
They knew what they were doing.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, this game has a lot more going on than an Ace Attorney game does. So like if hearing that it's Ace Attorney makes you go, oh, I don't want to sit in the courtroom. No, there's a lot more going on than that.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to do like an episode of JCP on this game thus far, or maybe just like season 1, because chapter 4 is going to be like the first part of season 2. So you know, there's going to be another. I know that Ethan has at least 6 total games planned. So, or chapters planned. So that would be, like another couple of games to come out in the future. But anyway, I need to get some other people playing this game and then interested in being on a podcast with me so I can talk about it, it at length. So anyway, Moxie and Dennis, y'all both saw some of this. What do you think?
The only part I was there for was very hanging with chat dominated.
Uh-huh.
And then the tiny other portion was reading text. So I do not feel qualified to comment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unfortunately.
Gotcha. You weren't there for the action elements. Okay, gotcha.
No, none of the action elements. I mean, visually, it looks as good as an RPG Maker game can. So, mm-hmm. you know. No,
yeah,
no,
that's something that a lot of people who popped in and out of my chat said that this game is very pretty. Like some people were like, it doesn't even look like an RPG Maker game in terms of like the quality of the visuals and everything. A lot of compliments about the music and surprise about how it plays because it has so much going on other than the courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remain impressed by the developer's like commitment to having like a new gameplay mechanic every episode.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right. So Moxie, how about you? Like you didn't even get to see the beat 'em up parts. I don't think you were there for those.
No, I was mostly there for the actual investigation. Which I don't know, is that something that the Ace Attorney and stuff like that has? Because yep. Okay, because I had mainly in that been exposed to, like, the actual courtroom scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But I really digged kind of the going around and interrogating people. And particularly with how, like, nonsense this was with, like, oh, yeah, we're totally using this giant, like, military industrial complex special effects machine right. and stuff.
right. So, yeah, and it's a lot of fun. The characters are fun, and, you know, like, there's overlap. Some of the characters carry over from one to another. Like, the guy who runs the studio that has the Magical Girl show in Chapter 4 is actually one of the racers from one of the different groups that you have to compete against in the racer part from the chapter before.
It is like Phoenix, right?
And not only that,
everything's a multiverse nowadays.
Well, it also has like an overarching story of Nina and Nina's, you know, like mentor figure. And, you know, there's a bunch of mystery surrounding her past and Nina's past as well, like her mentor and her own past. And, you know, like a lot of other things going on as well. There's also like apparently a war going on outside of this city. Like we don't, you know, you vaguely hear reference to something happening in the north. And I'm sure that that's going to be something. If I'm not mistaken, I think that the Chapter 5 entry is supposed to be mech based.
Hmm.
So there's going to be like mech wars kind of thing going on. So I might be wrong. You know, don't quote me. I believe that's what I saw kicking around in the Tanuki-sama Studios Discord. So, So yeah, there's that. Any questions about Nina Aquila, Legal Eagle, Chapter 4?
No, continues to sound neat.
Yeah. So the next thing I've got to talk about is Dagon. It's a free 3D narrative walking sim experience, which retells the classic story by Lovecraft. It was released in 2021 by BitGollum, and it is VR supported, so you can look around and see stuff in VR as well. This also has a DLC with additional short stories based on Lovecraft's letters and a story that he wrote when he was 7, which is very funny, actually. Okay. And then all proceeds from the DLC, if you buy those, because those are purchase only, all those proceeds then go to help victims of the war in Ukraine.
Oh, cool.
So this is a very neat, short little experience that I would recommend to anybody who likes Lovecraft. And this developer has several other games available. One that is coming to early access soon is a roguelite Lovecraftian pool game,
Which
looks fun. So
wait, billiards or swimming? Yes,
billiards. But it has like a Cthulhoid monster and a billiards table.
That's pretty cool. I like that. Yeah.
I'm just going to say, if you're in a pool, like a swimming pool, there's lots of room for Cthulhuid monsters.
There is, yeah. I streamed this back around the time it came out. Yeah. Okay. It's neat, although I did find the mechanics to be very slight. You're put into like pretty scenes and then you're like looking for inspection points. Mm-hmm. And once you're done, you kind of like segue to the next thing.
Right, right. It's a real basic, real small kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I probably missed that whenever you streamed it, because it was like a one night, one thing out of one night, because it's very short.
Yeah, it only would have been like 40 minutes to an hour. Right. And that's appropriate, I think. Like, yeah, do I wish that there was mechanical rigor? Yes, because I always do. But also Dagon is such a short story. Right. That, like, if they were looking to, like, flex their muscle to try and show some real cool imagery, but didn't have, you know, the resources to spool out something very involved, then that is perfect. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I just picked it up because I was like, well, it's free. It's Lovecraftian. It looks kind of neat. I don't know what this is. But, you know, I'm also down for, like, a very light on any kind of input experience, you know, like I do those FMV, like Wales Interactive FMV game things, where it's like every once in a while you push a button, otherwise you're just watching a movie, more or less. Yeah. You know, so like I don't care, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, would I like to have a game that has more of this kind of thing? Yes. So
mm-hmm.
like, you know, like an action-y. Anyway, whatever. I'll move on to the last one. So the last one I have to talk about is Songs of Conquest. So this is a turn-based tactical 4X game developed by Lava Potion and released by Coffee Stain Publishing in 2024. I do not believe that I have ever brought one of these to the show before in the decade plus I've been on the show.
I mean... This looks similar enough to at least the PlayStation version of at least the combat does, reminds me an awful lot of the combat from Lunar, of the PlayStation one, like what with the hex and moving stuff around. Okay, yeah.
No, there's no hexes in Lunar for one, but also this is like platoons of troops.
Okay,
and you have like a dude over them that has magic. So I'll explain it.
Yeah.
So reviewers very commonly call this a successor to Heroes of Might and Magic 3, but mm-hmm. I never played any of Heroes of Might and Magic, so I don't have that as a point of reference. I prefer to say it is a cross between something like a Fire Emblem and an RTS.
Mm-hmm.
So the first mission that I played took about an hour to an hour and 20 minutes because I had to redo a portion. And this is about how long it takes to clear one of the storyline maps from Fire Emblem Engage. So it's mm-hmm. about on par for how long it takes to clear a map. You get to play as one of four magicians known as wielders. So there's a bunch of different game modes. Campaign mode is where you go through a storyline. That's what I'm doing right now. Conquest mode is where you go head to head with AI opponents or real players, and you can also have AI or real people as allies, because the base game has four factions. So, you know, you have up to four players can play in conquest mode at a time. You've also got challenge mode that provides tactical puzzles to solve. And then there's also a map editor where you can create your own adventure and script in-game events and dialogue and so on.
Nice.
So there's also DLC that includes new factions, wielders, biomes, troops, magic, and maps. And this won an award for best 2D visuals when it came out. And after you finish a mission in the campaign, a bard sings about your exploits. So that's why it's called the Songs of Conquest.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're going around this map, you've got like your little troop guys that follow you. You start out with just like the ability to have just a couple of units, you know, like platoons or whatever. And, you know, as you go through combat scenarios, you as the wielder can use magic against your opponents, depending upon the movements of your troops. And, your troops themselves, can do, you know, different types of attacks depending upon what type of troop they are. You can recruit more guys, and whenever you come across like mercenaries hanging out in the wild, or if you happen to come to a town, that kind of thing, as long as you have enough gold for it. So you're constantly looking in the environment for loot, like artifacts and gold. And, you know, anything that'll buff you, because there's a bunch of different places of power that will give you yourself as the wielder or your troops different types of buffs.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different campaigns that you can play. There's the four different wielders that have four missions apiece in the campaign mode. So I'm playing the frog guy. He is one of the Rana people. And, you know, I think his name is Rask. And anyway, he is basically broken out of enslavement. And, you know, once he's freed, he's told to go back to the marshland where his family, you know, the rest of his kind are, to basically get away from the slavers, you know, the kingdom that's trying to keep them under their boot. And so you have to go across the map and, you know, gather troops and defeat enemies and stuff as you go. But you have to hurry it up because there's like a pursuing troop that's coming from the place that you just escaped from that is following after you, and they will kick your ass. So
okay,
almost so, FTL style,
huh?
Is that almost FTL style?
Almost, oh, okay. Sounds yeah. Almost FTL style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. So, yeah, and, like, I was wandering around the map because I don't pay attention to instructions, so I was like, I'm going to wander around and look at stuff.
Oh,
and then, like, and then I saw the troop coming up, and I was like, oh, shit, they're coming close, huh? So yeah. Then there was a town nearby, so I tried first to go into the town, and then as I'm fortified in this town, try to defend it from these people coming, except there weren't enough troops in the town built up enough for me to actually adequately defend because I hadn't been hanging out there for a while letting the place build up, you know? So that didn't work. So I had to reload from an earlier point on the map and then instead go another way to a still really risky battle, but not nearly as bad as the people who were pursuing me. And basically, I was one turn away. Like, if I didn't beat that group of guys at the end of the map on the side that I was on in that turn, then I was going to get the floor wiped with me, and I would have had to redo the whole map. But I won, so
okay.
I got through by the skin of my teeth, but dragging along as many artifacts and experience and stuff as possible. So I did finish that mission. So I look forward to playing the next mission in this particular thing. I will say that they're bards, you know, like the bards who sing of your exploits after you finish the mission sound like people who are just in a bar singing, like not anybody with any kind of actual training to sing, which, I mean, like that's on point for if you're in some medieval place.
Yeah.
Like bards are just some guy, you know?
So these are actual literal like audio songs.
Yes.
I assumed it was just like lyrics with the note symbol.
No, there's a guy singing.
Wow, that's cool.
He sings your story and you see a few little like scenes of the bar scene where this guy is singing your story.
That's so impressive.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I look forward to playing more of it and then also going into the DLC because there's more wielders and there's more types of troops and biomes and maps and, you know, storylines and things to be had there. So
yeah, this looks an awful lot like Heroes of Might and Magic 3. Now that you pointed out that was a point of comparison.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've never played that game.
That's
I
old.
Wouldn't know, but yeah. That's what people do tell me.
Yeah, no, this looks neat. I'll be honest. Like there's something about the key art or the logo or something that makes it look a little bit, like it's some slop.
Right.
my eyes just kind of like glaze over it, but looking closer, like, oh yeah, the game doesn't look like that at all. It's just a bad logo.
Right.
Yeah. This is neat.
There might be a story about that later on.
Cool. I don't have any other questions about this.
Great. I've exhausted all the things that I've played recently.
Yeah, you brought a lot.
I know.
Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I got a couple things. The first is a game that's on Game Pass called The Altars.
Oh, shit. And, yeah, my news story is related to that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was going to say, they've been in the press for the wrong reasons. We'll get to that in the news story. I'll talk about the game, though, which is a bit of the coolest sci-fi that I've seen in a while. So it is a, base building and resource management game where you kind of control a single avatar. But the big story conceit is that, you were supposed to be a grunt worker on this big mining expedition in space. But when you wake up on the planet, everyone that was supposed to be on your crew is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you are left alone to manage this huge mining rig that simply cannot be operated by a single person. On top of that, the planet that you're on is apparently one of those ones where when it's facing the sun, it is an oven that will melt slash cook anything alive. And so you have to keep constantly moving. Otherwise, you will certainly die and be burned to a crisp.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is very good motivation for you to do something relatively unorthodox, which is to make a clone of yourself. And it just so happens that, the resource that you are trying to mine, called Rapidium, is this like miracle resource that causes biological life to advance at rapid rates. So that's great. There's also a quantum computer that was guiding your process through the stars. Basically, like they launch these mining missions, not knowing exactly where the planet they're going to is, but like the computer analyzes data and charts the course as it goes to the highest probability places.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's just an excuse for you to have a quantum computer that can simulate alternate life paths for you. And when you clone yourself, you create a clone that has a different set of memories and skills.
Huh.
Yeah. So it is taking, spawning a bunch of workers to gather resource to you to the ultimate relational level, where each of these workers is you to an extent. Mm-hmm. And you have a very, I probably spent a solid half hour, if not more, in the first session just reading through the history of the main character's life.
Yeah.
And it's told in a series of vignettes, like key moments. And there's probably like 30 of them kind of across their life from, early childhood to 35 years old. And what you do at the quantum computer is select one of those key memories, and the computer identifies, oh, if you had stayed in college here instead of leading for that professional opportunity, you would have gained all this research knowledge that we need.
You done fucked up.
Well, and that's the thing. And the character even, the character is overtly kind of a fuck up.
Yeah.
Well, isn't
like, go ahead.
I was going to say, the director that made Parasite, didn't he just make a movie about this?
Mickey 17. Yes, I have not seen that, so I can't draw parallels.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of like this person cloned over and over is very prescient to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is where Mickey 17, the idea is like, each of them are kind of the same and expendable. And what if one, I don't know the plot, but yeah, like the trailers make it seem like they're, the intent is that each of these are expendable. This game, really focuses on the weight of like, these are each unique and whole human beings,
mm-hmm,
with their own histories and perspectives and hangups.
Yeah,
et cetera.
And it's playing around with like, identity as persistence of memory. So like they are technically you, but also. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So the memory path that makes you a technician is like you standing up to your abusive father in early childhood instead of like kind of hiding from him.
Hmm.
But as a consequence, that technician is you, but also like hyper confrontational.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So are there scenarios where it's like, hey, this person is like going to try to assert me, I'm going to have to kill them?
So the game does an amazing job of making you paranoid about that. And that's all I'll say, because I don't want to spoil anything. But between, yes, managing the relationships between your alters, like the researcher and the technician hate each other. And then managing, you know, obviously trying to not die, but then also managing, like, you're in communication with your home base, but it's like the corporation you're working for obviously is very excited that you found Rapidium.
Mm-hmm.
And like some people that you talk with at the corporation are kind of like pushing you towards like, hey, yeah, totally escape and survive. That's top priority. But also like would be really amazing if you could bring back a lot of Rapidium.
Mm-hmm.
And they stress like this is because of its implications. It's like if you could get Rapidium back to Earth, it would end food shortages forever as we know.
Right.
So like, you know, they're not unjustified. And like there's another person that's like maybe mild spoiler, but like some of your alters remember things that are helpful that don't actually exist. So like the researcher mentored a student that went on to found a startup that invented this technology that you need to like progress. And when you're like, when you go back to the main corporation, you're like, hey, can you send over the blueprints for XYZ to manufacture? They're like, oh, that project failed and nothing ever came of it.
Cause you fucked up.
Cause you are a fuck up. All these other people have good stories. No, actually some of the alters you bring in are way bigger fuck ups than you are. And that has its own set of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, you know, but you know, some people at the corporation want the Rapidium. Some people are like, it feels a little veiled, but it's like very excited about the potential of these alters to like also bring advances.
Mm-hmm.
And again, on the page, it's like all good things for humanity, but also like, why was all,
I mean,
of my,
it's a corporation.
Exactly. And they play that really well. Like, my crew was dead when I got here. Like, I wasn't mm-hmm. supposed to be having to do this. So isn't it serendipitous that the thing that also that saves my ass on this distant planet could also be revolutionary for humans? But what implications does that have? You know, what about the quantum computer? Does that have like some kind of agency in this? And you just wind up so paranoid. And I'm doing things that like, I don't know if they have a gameplay impact. But I'm being very careful. Like the communication room to the outside world is on the other side of my personal quarters,
mm-hmm.
just to make sure no one's in there without me knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, anytime that there's, you spend a lot of time in dialogue trees, but yeah, let me back up and talk gameplay. So
yeah,
there's the resource management side of it. You know, you got minerals and organics and yada yada that you're farming from the planet's surface and then using that to craft stuff. There is the exploration where you're like running around a given area of this planet's surface to find all that stuff, but that comes with hazards and challenges, etc. And that happens in real time. And then a huge chunk of the game is just like dialogue between you and your alters. And it does, you know, they all have, there's like 8 different categories of things from, you know, motivation to fear, to anxiety, to gloom is one mm-hmm. of them. And you know, they, again, each person is unique, even though they're all you technically. And so you got to manage as you're talking to them, to try to keep their mood up because it is very real, danger that they could mutiny on you.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime any one of them tries to say something like, you know, oh, we're so the same, I go nuclear on like, nope, I am the original. I'm the first one. Yeah. I am the first one. And I know it's having a detrimental effect on the crew, but God damn it. Like I'm scared because I am the least useful person on this vessel other than being the first.
Yeah.
And like that paranoia seeps in. There's,
can you play them against each other? Can you go to the technician and be like, hey, it'd be great if we had some guns to protect ourselves from all these other fuck ups.
Not only can you, but you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. There are very clear conversations frequently where it's you walk in on the two alters arguing about something and have to like choose a side essentially.
Yeah. Like this is, you know, okay, so this is 11-bit, the Frostpunk people, but also mm-hmm. the This War of Mine people. This feels mm-hmm. like them revisiting the like person, you know, the personal management stuff from This War of Mine, because you would get into very similar situations.
Yeah, exactly. And they, you know, because I'm just on my first playthrough, I don't know how much of this seems like there's a ton of depth and branching versus how much of it is on rails.
Mm-hmm.
But even like the alters that I brought in, I had lots of options, and obviously each of those would have come with different dialogue trees, et cetera. So, there's a lot there. But to the paranoia, and the, you know, intersection with the gameplay, you only have so many slots to bring in alters. Like the quantum computer can only handle so many initially. And I had brought in, I think a certain number before realizing that I needed a researcher. And it's like, we need to research this to get the base moving. Otherwise we will be cooked by the sun. And I have used all of my slots for alters.
Who's feeling like a hero?
Yeah. And just that like heart. And again, I got there all on my own. I did not need to create that many. I could have created the researcher like earlier on. I could have already had the researcher, but that moment of going, okay, I need one, and the heart sinks and just like, fuck, I might have to kill someone, was just the strongest reaction I've had, playing a freaking resource management game in a long time. I found a way around it, we'll say. Without saying too much. But the game has just continued to deliver those kinds of moments. And it's really cool. Just having that kind of pressure put onto what otherwise is a fairly straightforward, build your base and collect enough resources game.
Yeah.
So they've, 11-bit does good work. I think people are mad at them right now over some AI stuff. We'll talk about that. But the actual game here is very, one, the concept is incredibly cool. And then the delivery on that works really well as well.
Yeah. So since we're here, I'll just bump forward my news story on this because it's right here. So there's controversy because 11-bit, like a bunch of other studios, has been caught up using AI and not disclosing it ahead of time. So people who are playing it noticed that there was one particular asset that was text on a computer screen. The texture for it with the text contained the ChatGPT prompt for it, for the text that was on there. Oh, no. Yeah.
And I can vouch because I looked at that screen and I recognize like the place that is in your base. Yeah. It is tiny. I don't think I physically could read it unless I was like super duper zooming in beyond the capabilities of what the game lets you do.
But you get thousands of people playing it. Somebody's going to see it.
Someone's going to see it. This is in terms of like, where to characterize this. This feels a lot more like leaving like lorem ipsum text in than
it's frustrating because they could have just left lorem ipsum text in avoided
it. That would have been great.
But also like it would have been easier to do lorem ipsum as opposed to like, so they're saying like, oh yeah, this is placeholder art. You could have just, if it was placeholder, typed out TK, TK, TK and noticed it, stuff like that.
The other piece is a little more frustrating to me.
Yes. Yeah. The other piece is that they used, AI localization for a number of the different languages for the territories in which it was going to come out, and did not disclose that. People discovered it. And 11-bit put out a statement saying, yeah, that was placeholder, but also it would have been impossible for us to release this game on our time schedule and also deliver it to a bunch of these different territories at the same time. It would have been a resource crunch, ironically enough. The problem with this, as opposed to losing customer goodwill, which I can say, like, yeah, this makes me like this studio less, is that Steam, Valve has for, I think since like early 2024, required that developers disclose any use of AI specifically that makes it into the final product of the game. And
you also have to certify that you're above 18 when you go to certain web pages. So
Right.
It's got about the same level of weight.
But also Valve is a single company that really, really needs to preserve people's trust in its marketplace. And it's possible that that 11-bit could see punishment off of the back of this. You know, who knows what it's going to be. Like, Valve's decision-making process can be very slow. But yeah, people are really upset, and especially the non-apology JPEG that they put out didn't necessarily help a lot of people.
It was overly defensive, and that was a bad look.
It was basically, no, you guys don't understand. We didn't think we were going to get caught.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. On the translation front, I almost want to be like, I want to hear from someone who would not have been able to play the game unless it came out in their language and get their perspective. Because I feel like it's easy for me as an English speaker to be like, yeah.
Everybody caters to you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I won't comment on that front. And I don't even like, you know, AI translation for a resource constrained studio. Okay. Like, I don't even think that's the worst thing in the world, but disclose it. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they thought they were going to get a backlash for disclosing it, but they sure as hell have one now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So 11-bit has bought a lot of goodwill. And like I said, the game shines. The pieces that AI touched, at least as far as I know, I guess, aren't really factors in what I play. But I think the way you framed it, Kay, was really well, that like, even if this was only like 0.3%, this just goes to show how much people don't want AI even in that 0.3%.
I think it's important to hold the line and make there be at least a social consequence for this. Like, oh yeah, no, you fucked up. And how they move forward is probably going to impact, you know, their reputation and stuff. But like, yeah, it just additionally, like, it is unclear who at the studio did this. I do not see people who are invested in the quality of a localization, or people, you know, who are putting this together, going to AI as a tactic of first resort, I guess. So, the idea that if this was foisted on everybody as leadership, well, fuck you. You aren't really involved in making the game. And also you've flushed our credibility down the toilet by this extremely short-sighted decision to use this and also not disclose it. Very unfair to the team, if that's the way that it worked out, as is often the case. So,
yeah. To put a cap on this, it will be incredibly poetic. Now, like I said, I'm paranoid about everything and everyone, but it will be incredibly poetic if the story of this game goes towards a HAL style. It's the quantum computer actively, hurting you.
It's like
you guys should have warned yourselves.
Yeah, it's just like no, we couldn't disclose. It would be a spoiler.
Oh, that's, I hadn't considered that angle. I like that better. That's good. So we shall see. But as an exercise in like really interesting sci-fi and paranoia, it's doing pretty well.
Yeah. Sucks. I like the studio. This game wasn't really on my radar, but I was like, oh yeah, no, I can probably wait to play that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then one other quick one. I'd like to introduce you guys to my new favorite puzzle game. It is called Finity. Has anyone heard of this or played it before?
Finity.
That is Finity. A very indie game-ass name.
It is.
Yes. It's a mobile game. It's a match 3 game. And yet I've found it more endearing and sticky than any of those that I've played recently. Basically, you've got, you know, a series of blocks on a 4x4 grid. And you can turn or, you know, rotate those blocks. I want to say Rubik's Cube style, but that's not quite it. You know, if you rotate them or like pull the line, the one that goes off to the right will reappear on the left. So you're spinning through and trying to match three that way. But obviously you're rotating the entire row up or down or side to side as you're matching. And if a block is moved and not involved in the match, its counter goes down. The counter goes down too far, it gets locked. First off in one direction and then in the other. so that more and more rows get immobilized. And when there's only when it's only 4x4, that problem can creep up on you really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Match enough, and you get into like the level clear stage where it drops in a special kind of block that's not usually there, and you just make one match three of that kind of block, and you're good to go. The interesting thing is that that one extra type of block on a 4x4 grid means that eventually almost a quarter of your, you know, area is made up of this type of block that you don't have any matches for. So, you know, you got to really start to strategize as you're getting to that stage, because that's also when just by entropy, you know, more and more of the regular blocks are starting to lock up.
Mm-hmm.
They progressively introduce a bunch of things, you know, blocks that have a different color on either side, blocks that are actually like too high or too wide. So like you can move it, but you're going to move an extra row along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you need to strategize how to match it without moving it. And yeah, it's just a wonderful game to, pop open. You know, you don't even have to clear a full level, just clear a couple rows. And it always is presenting interesting, challenges, trying to think ahead and position things the right way. So yeah, that's Finity.
Yeah. 4x4 is not a lot of space to work with. That's way too small for this.
It is very constraining. But hey, it's a puzzle game. It's supposed to be constraining.
Yeah. Nice. I like these mobile game things because I can just download it as I'm listening to you.
Okay. Yeah. Good. I've got about a month left of my free Apple Arcade, and then it goes away. So get your recommendations while you can.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So The Altars and Finity. Finite.
Correct.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Hey, not a whole heck of a lot. So Dennis and I continued on with Firebreak, and we've gotten through all of the main missions now. I'm trying to think. Kind of the final one, which is also probably one of the most cinematics, is there's some sort of anomalous chairlift, like a ski-style chairlift, that apparently likes to kill the people that get on it by freezing them to death. And if it doesn't get to kill enough people, it gets upset and starts producing cold anomalies all over the house.
Okay.
So you as the player have to first, you know, get these heaters, which are actually just like jet engines.
Yeah, like a propane tank on steroids.
Exactly. In this level that was supposed to be about not freezing to death, we sent a very significant portion of it accidentally being on fire.
Yes.
But yeah, so once you defeat those, you then, in order to sate the chairlift's bloodlust, you have to go around the stage and find mannequins and put them on the chairlift for it to, I guess, kill or whatever you do to a mannequin.
Yeah, and the implications of this are just fascinating, right? So it is a supernatural object hungry to kill, but also does not know the difference between a human and a mannequin. I don't know what it's triggering off of. It's not the soul, I don't think, unless mannequins have souls.
There you go. You got there. I've been saying this for years.
I mean, I saw that episode of Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I saw the mannequin movie, 1987. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very old. But anyway, there was a movie about a mannequin that came to life.
Yeah. I'm always saying this.
So, yeah, Moxie, I'd love your thoughts, because at least for me, like, it's fun to talk about this because the concepts are so cool and quirky, etc. And again, any excuse to spend more time in the oldest house.
Sweet. Right.
But the execution just has not been
it is not a very good game.
No, you guys were really pretty sunny on it last time.
Oh, that doesn't mean I'm not having a great time.
Okay.
just things like, as far as I can tell, there's like, what, there's 4 or 5 weapons in the game, and basically the correct answer is either of the 2 shotguns.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think especially because they got greedy with the unlock grind.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have a really shitty shotgun, a really shitty machine gun, and a really shitty revolver to start. Mm. And of those 3, the shotgun is really the only viable one to my mind. And then you can unlock, you know, 1 better weapon after the amount of time we played. And it's like, well, shotgun it is. And then the tier 2 shotgun is really the only option.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's some things where, is this their first not explicitly narrative game?
For Remedy?
I feel like they made something. Yeah, it might be their first stab at.
Yeah. It's not Remedy that did the Red Wall or whatever that failed.
No, that was that was Arcane. The closest thing that comes to like what this feels like is Alan Wake's Nightmare, which is not really narrative. It's a bunch of combat, like combat arena kind of things.
Interesting.
Not multiplayer, but sure. You know, close in spirit.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that is good to know that I will not have to play that before I play Alan Wake 2. but yeah, so just things where like, one, there's not a huge amount of enemy variety, but even more importantly, there's not a huge amount of justification for the enemies. Like, I don't know. I need to go back and beat Control. But I remember like each of the enemies and stuff had a lore entry and had like weird things of like, why am I fighting someone flying on an office chair? And they're just kind of there in this. So like
it leans very heavily on familiarity with Control.
Yes. So I think it's a thing like I think this is a game that is worth playing. And I could see it becoming a very good game. It feels to me like a game that, you know, was potentially made by people that aren't, you know, haven't made a ton of multiplayer shooters and might just need some time, you know, figuring out some of the ropes.
Oh, they categorically haven't.
An example of the lack of polish that is there right now, and then kind of uniquely this setting making it more of a problem, I guess, is during one of the missions, all of the enemies started moving like in a juddery fashion for me. Like very quickly a little bit and then would all freeze. And then very quickly for a little bit and all would all freeze. And I was like, Mox, are you seeing this? And they were like, no. And so it was just me. And I'm sitting there going like, this could be really cool if this is intentional. Like, am I having a hallucinatory effect or what's going on here?
Oh, it just sounds like netcode. Yeah.
It was totally just netcode. And that meant that as I'm firing at these waves, again, shotgun, each shot counts. It's like, okay, I hit one, and I don't know if I killed it or if it's just frozen in place right now and we'll be fine on the other end. And that was frustrating. And then in this most recent mission that we talked about, the freezer one, cold was an effect, and it slowed down enemies. But then I wasn't sure in the exact same way. Like, I shoot into this crowd, who actually got hit and who is just moving slow. It was hard to tell. And so it just leads to unsatisfying combat where, you know, the weapons don't feel impactful. And you feel more confused about, you know, whether or not you're making a difference than not. And on paper, that's a very SCP thing that fits in. But in play, it's just not the best experience.
Well, and I think it's also probably a thing where it's like this sort of game, you need to get a lot of the basics right so that you then kind of have the breathing room to then make other things ambiguous. I realize this is like the thing that if you're, you know, doing talk about games, you compare everything to Dark Souls, but I feel like that's like something that works with Dark Souls, where like normally the game is really, really solid and, you know, fair and that sort of thing. So that gives you the freedom to do just completely arcane things with like world tendency and whatnot.
Yeah. No, I mean, with any game, it's not just like a Dark Souls thing. You just need a solid base, and it sounds like this isn't there.
Yeah, there's also just some weird things. And they, like, for example, this isn't something that really affects enjoyment of the game, but is more just weird. As far as I can tell, you were completely invulnerable while you're reviving someone.
Okay.
Yes.
Which... again, some of this gets to kind of how you approach the game. Like, to me, I think part of why I'm enjoying this a lot is, like, I'm kind of just here for the ride. So I am completely on board for the fact that, like, I think we've only failed a single mission. And part of that is because, like, I eventually realized, oh, if someone's down, you can just bonsai run and, like, start reviving them. And even if you're in an entire crowd that's shooting at you, nothing happens. And, like, I'm okay with that because I mainly want this to be kind of a, somewhat Keystone Cops, like, adventure, you know, lighthearted whatever. But, you know, it is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Another thing, this isn't really a bad thing. It's just interesting to me. The tone of the game is a little odd. Like, on the one hand, it's, you know, pretty lighthearted and, like, the banter between the characters is pretty endearing, that sort of thing. But then there's other things where it feels like it's kind of trying to do a weird, like, dark evil corporation thing.
That's Control.
Yeah, I guess. I know.
That doesn't sound in conflict to me.
Yeah, I need to get farther in Control. I didn't get far enough to see a lot of lighthearted stuff. Like, it was all the stuff I played was almost all fairly dark. But yeah.
When you get to the stuff with like the lead researcher guy, the guy who voices Alan Wake, stuff gets really, you know, just it's kind of tonally all over the place.
Okay, well, that's
trying to
good.
Get like a shading portal stuff into the, you know, institutional horror kind of thing that it's doing.
Nice.
Well, and there's an element of like absurdity is required for cosmic horror.
Yeah.
That the oldest house attracts quirky, not all their characters. Mm-hmm. And then the kinds of stuff you're dealing with it sounds really funny on paper that a floppy disk is throwing stuff around the room or what have you. I think it's Control does, I think, mostly self-serious with some absurdity a lot better than Firebreak does mostly absurdity with some serious.
Right.
Yeah, I will say, like, hope they keep, adding to this and building onto it, because I do think there's a lot they could do. I would love to see them take some pages from some of the actual SCP games and just put in random anomalies that can show up that you have to figure out how to deal with. I should say, though, on that subject, I did unlock my ultimate ability, which is straight up a lawn gnome that summons a local thunderstorm.
Okay.
Which,
like some Wallace and Gromit kind of shenanigans.
Yeah, yeah. Which is both very cool, and I feel like lawn gnome based superpowers kind of justify themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my final thought on the game was kind of harkening back to a little bit what Moxie was talking about. Is like, I'm having such a good time with it, probably because I'm playing with a good friend mm-hmm. rather than mm-hmm. because of anything inherent in yeah. the game. So my main recommendation here is play video games with Moxie.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. We'll set up a Google Calendar for you. You have anything else, Moxie?
So I've been continuing on with The Division. I can't think that there's anything too noteworthy here. I'm starting to run into a little bit of frustration in that as I'm getting into doing more builds and, engaging with more of that part of the game, there's a couple of items that, rare items that are just very explicitly necessary for a lot of builds. Most notably, I think I've mentioned there's one item that you can basically use as a wild card for any set piece, and a lot of builds revolve around that. Or like, I wanted to do, just for 4th of July, thought like it'd be fun to do their red, white, and blue set where, if you basically put all these buffs on enemies, then when you kill them, they like explode in fireworks.
Okay.
But the problem is in order to, the set was one of the first ones released, and it's kind of, suffered from, everything else power creeping. But there's one variant of it that, people have made that's like end game capable. However, in order to get it to work, you have to have a specific item that the way you got it is logging onto the game on one single specific day.
Ugh.
And so, yeah, just some stuff like that. That's less than ideal, but, still overall, it's still fun to, just run around shooting things, stuff like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. I don't know if I have any questions. Sounds like The Division.
Yep.
Yeah. For me, I really don't have anything. I finished up Labyrinth of the Demon King. Same thing I said last week, holds on that. The first dungeon is way too difficult for me to recommend it. There could be, balancing patches, new things. Like there's already something on their beta, their beta version or whatever that might, possibly address that. So like it's aesthetically a neat game. Like there's the shape of something cool there. It just, you have to suffer through that first dungeon. That's like half of the game to get to two dungeons that are pretty cool. And then a final boss that I had to cheese. So,
oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Cheese console command cheese, or cheese like,
cheese like I'd never really done anything with ranged combat or spells, because it's not a game where you really necessarily need to do that or have the ability to. But like I tried going toe to toe with him and would be killed in like three or four hits. And then I was like, well, let me break these out and try. And then just melted them. So.
Why hadn't you been using range the whole game?
Because it's real limited.
Only for final bosses.
Right. You can only hold like 10 arrows at a time or something like that. It's really absurd.
So. Yeah. Okay. So I looked it up online just because I was interested in seeing, and it seemed like pretty much everyone agreed like the way you fight the final boss is either arrows or like use a Naginata to be able to attack him at range.
Yeah, yeah. So wish I liked it more. I say that about way too many games. But yeah, went in and I don't know. It just, the Kingsfield alike is so rare, so incredibly rare that to have one come and not land is just the pits.
So I think from watching it, one of my takeaways was I would actually kind of dig seeing some like FromSoft do some games that were very much their formula, except that don't have to be like this vast epic, like, you know, the entire fate of reality, but were instead just like, hey, you're Dark Souling through what's effectively a haunted house.
Yeah,
I think that would be cool.
That's partially why I want more Kingsfield games.
Yeah.
because they don't have that, you know, massive scope kind of thing.
Yep. Unfortunately, okay. After the success of Elden Ring, I doubt that's the direction they're going to go in.
Yeah, probably right. Not. Yeah. So yeah, that's Labyrinth of the Demon King, a game I have talked about at length too much.
Do you have your sights on anything next for streaming games?
No, not right now. I've got a couple of possibilities, but it depends on what this weekend looks like. So
I don't know if this would work for streaming because it's not exactly a horror game. But I saw someone playing. Have you seen it's Ball Pit, although spelled Ball X Pit, and it's basically like if you took a Vampire Survivors game, so you know, kill lots of enemies, get experience, and you know, select from three options, that sort of thing. Except instead of being a bullet heaven game, it's Breakout.
Oh, huh.
So I don't know. Yeah, just, I remembered you. I think you've mentioned that you have a fondness for Breakout, so it struck me as something you might dig.
I'm more of an Arkanoid gal.
I think maybe in like my knowledge of this sort of things, Arkanoid might be for me equivalent. So this might be very similar to Arkanoid.
Yeah,
I just know like the whole thing is basically your bullets, you know, bounce, that sort of thing, and waves of enemies are coming towards you. So you're like trying to get, you know, can I get the bullet to go up above the waves of enemies so it bounces back and forth and hits them a bunch? You know, that sort
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah. Similar like hold down, yeah.
If you're going to be too pedantic about what's Breakout and not, I'm going to get Arkanoid.
Yeah, right. No, I'm yeah, I'm not actually trying to split hairs on that.
Oh, no. That was entirely a genre I like. So I don't necessarily know the difference.
Yeah. I don't know if that'll be a good fit for a stream, but I didn't know about that game. Also, it's got a demo, but not a full release.
Oh, okay. This was probably someone doing like the Next Fest or something I saw.
Yeah, that sounds most likely. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, this game is half-baked, it's janky, it really is not well-executed, but I still recommend you play it. I wanted to know about games like that, so you gave us your recommendations for the jankiest game that you still think is worth playing.
Yeah, and Rookie from the Slack says, Fallout New Vegas. I think this is kind of the example. It's easily the best modern Fallout game, except for the part where your save can get fucked in any number of ways because you've earned the gods' disfavor by clicking on the wrong pixel at the wrong time. Ride the quick save, and you'll have a great time, usually. If you play with the fan patches and stuff on the PC version, you should be good. Obviously, still practice good save hygiene. I think that a lot of the reputation that New Vegas gets is strictly because of the console ports, which were disastrous.
I'm sorry. Did you?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I still need to play that game, though.
Mm-hmm. Jala, what's Threnza say?
Threnza says, probably some recency bias at play here, but Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines fits this 100%.
And that's Jack's response in the Slack as well. Jack put it humorously. I hear we're one third of the way through the new season of Real Lich Hours. Yeah, no, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines is a mess, but it's still worth playing. So it fits the remit perfectly. Yeah. Let's see. Moxie, what does Dave say?
Dave says, Risen 2 Dark Waters. It has a fully realized open world. There are factions you can join and quest lines you can totally just fluff up. The combat is ridiculous, but fun.
Yeah. I always get Risen mixed up with Two Worlds. Also mixed up with Mount and Blade. Those were all games that came out in my mind roughly at the same time, and they're all open world, Oblivion alikes.
You're probably also confusing that with Risen Two Worlds Mount and Blade Edition.
Right. Which was a fucking mess, honestly.
See, I always Mount and Blade, Crusader Kings, and Kingdom Come.
One of those is really not like the others, Moxie.
I mean, they were all games that I unfortunately knew a lot of, like, Western... fascists. Fascist is basically the word I'm looking for.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That liked them a lot. Which is unfortunate because they're also all games that I think the developers would not like fascists, but...
Yeah, Paradox doesn't necessarily embrace that side of their fan base.
It's also just unfortunate to know a lot of fascists in any context.
Yep. I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says, satisfactory, rough edges and all. There's something very soothing about building a complete factory out of digital Legos.
You expect me to argue?
I love those letters.
My limited experience with Satisfactory was primarily around, like, why does the fucking pipe not bend that fucking way? when it will bend completely the other way.
You eventually get used to all those little quirks, but it is a process. And it does qualify as jank, most definitely. Especially, you know, because, like, any kind of cosmetic work that you're going to be doing on your base, like, requires you to understand, like, the way things snap, and everything is counterintuitive.
The one thing that game really needs is to take a page from Deep Rock Galactic and make it so you can grind on your pipes.
I think that there is something that lets you do something with that. I don't know. I might be getting that mixed up with the zip lines on the power lines.
Oh, okay. But,
yeah. Josh writes, it's still fairly polished, but the original Infamous game has some super janky controls. Climbing buildings in general in that game is janky. You gravitate towards so many different objects while climbing that it makes traversal really silly at times.
Yeah, Infamous is a great one. I think one of the things I love most about it is simultaneously my game that has both the best and the worst moral choices of any game I've ever played.
It's the, like, example of, what is it, pet the puppy or eat the puppy?
Right.
I think.
Yeah, I think, Dennis, you're the one who pointed this out to me. Like, one of the initial ones is literally just like, I could share my food or I could not.
Yeah.
But so that's just awful. On the other hand, like the non-official more choices where it's things where like you're about to just throw this massive ball of electricity, and right as like a civilian goes running through the battlefield and you have to decide like, am I going to abort this attack in order to prevent collateral damage? That is, mm-hmm. I think, the about the best moral choice I've seen in a game.
Yeah. Let's see. Jala, what does Brain in a Bowl say?
Brain in a Bowl says, Alpha Protocol. It's an early Obsidian game with all the rough patches that entails. But when it shines, it's brilliant.
This was going to be my answer, so I'm just going to piggyback off the back of this. Alpha Protocol is a fucking treasure. Like, it is the best, like, Mass Effect style, you know, dialogue wheel kind of implementation, because, like, the choices actually matter, and you get into dialogue boss fights where, like, you're not always trying to say, like, the funniest thing, or it's not always, like, I've unlocked the skill, and therefore I can win this. Like, it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can, like, goad somebody, you know, like a really professional guy into completely losing his fucking mind on you so badly that he gets a disadvantage in the boss fight that you do with him right after. Right. The problem is that the stealth is incredibly, is incredibly roughshod, slipshod. So that's a bummer.
Yeah. The reason I never got even through the first level on it is, I forget, I think I played it on PC, and the hacking minigame is very explicitly designed for consoles and is almost impossible on PC.
Yeah, you have to do it with a controller. Yeah. It's neat. Let's see. Moxie, what does Mirko say?
Mirko says, lest we forget, the first Dark Souls was unpolished and janky as all shit.
I mean, FromSoft has kind of continued to be a little bit janky. Like, it's been, like, a little bit better since, like, Bloodborne. But, like, Dark Souls 1 and 2, there are a lot of rough edges in those. Mm-hmm. Which, you know me, I am, you know, jank is not a disqualifier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nor should it be.
Nope. And Dennis, what does Callum say?
Callum says, Bethesda Fallout games. Just play them on PC because you need console commands for a door that won't open.
Yep.
Same thing for Vampire. Well, Vampire doesn't come out on consoles, so fuck me.
Oh, no.
But just like in terms of, you know, console commands necessary to make a game function. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I've already done mine, Alpha Protocol, so I will ask you, Jala, how about yours?
So I would say there's this game that I mentioned a long, long time ago that I had co-opted a bit of with Sam, Clandestine. Mm-hmm. Clandestine is an asymmetrical co-op kind of like, so one person is doing the shoot 'em up part and the other person is like manning the cameras and stuff.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
To help that person navigate through. And It's janky. It's this weird thing from somewhere in Europe, mm-hmm. Like a small country in Europe somewhere. Like the models will clip through and the voice acting is terrible. And, you know, like there's some little bits here and there that are janky. Not from what we noticed, it's anything that would break the gameplay. It's just kind of like charming jank, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. God, that is such a good idea for a game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like that and what is it, Operation Tango or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to name check it if you didn't.
Yeah,
I need to definitely go back to that game and like go play it with somebody and like actually get all the way through.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
So I've kind of got two. The first one, kind of my equivalent of, you know, the the kind of Dark Souls in terms of, you know, it's a classic, but janky. It's definitely the original Stalker. I still think probably the best open world game ever made, by a pretty long shot, but also janky as hell. The other one I would do, and I don't know if Dennis might also piggyback on this one some, is Army of Two. That one's more tonally janky, particularly the second one in the game that has some really, really questionable moral choices. But then also, you know, some of the gameplay is a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think both of those count. You are the only people who I've ever really heard talk about Army of Two. Mm. You and Dennis. So.
And it fits so many examples.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, just so happens to be my favorite game of all time, which is XCOM 2.
Mm-hmm.
That game is broken to randomly crashing levels of jank, but also just like mechanically, there are so many things that are not explained / almost certainly not intentional.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you can see someone, but you destroy their cover that they're behind without killing them, it's possible you will lose line of sight on them. Purely because when they are behind cover, they are considered to also be in the square adjacent to the cover for when they like pop out and shoot. But if the cover is destroyed, then they're just in that one square. So if your line of sight, which the game gives you no indication of where you can and can't see, moving to a given position, if your line of sight divides those two squares, then shooting at someone and destroying their cover is actually the worst possible thing you can do, because now you can't shoot them anymore to finish it off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just thing after thing after thing after thing like that. You know, when will a grenade destroy the roof and cause people to drop through versus when will the roof hold? Your guess is as good as mine. But, you know, your entire Iron Man run rides on that. Just stuff like that. But it is just an amazing game through and through from the chaos and complexity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That reminds me of, did you ever play Phantom Doctrine?
No.
It's basically an XCOM style, except it's Cold War era spy stuff. Pretty well regarded, apparently really great storyline, but apparently your character's AI is just janky as hell. So it'll be things where like you'll do a move command into a room, and instead of like going through the door, your character will just like bust through the window for no reason.
No.
That was in my way.
Which is problems because this is a game that, unlike XCOM, is very much about stealth.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. Yeah, for XCOM, there are situations where like if an area is in your movement reach, but there are walls that would otherwise prevent you from getting there, there's a way you can like jank around getting your character into position that just has them running an incredible amount of distance. especially you gotta like use waypoints and click a certain way, but as long as you end up in the right area, the game is totally fine with you running across the map.
Can you use that to like stealth scout the map?
You could, except you almost always want to not scout.
Okay.
Which in a game like that, I could go on all night. Yeah, the game is so much about like not seeing enemies that you're not ready to see. not hiding from them, not them not seeing you, but you not seeing them before you're ready.
Is that true even the second one? Because my understanding was that the second XCOM actually had a real stealth system.
It had an ambush system.
Yeah.
Two very different things, but that is another podcast for sure.
Yes. Fair enough.
Thank you so much, Dennis, for posting. Thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate in these, go to Blue Sky and follow us at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Moxie, since we were previously talking about AI stuff in my little sneak attack news story there, lead with yours.
Yeah, so there's a there's becoming a kind of weird side problem related to AI, which is not only are some companies lying and using AI and then saying they're not, but now there's a problem the opposite. Companies are getting accused of using AI when they haven't. So an example that's covered in this article is for the game Stamina Zero, which apparently the actual game is pretty stylized, that sort of thing, but its cover art is this very kind of polished, sort of airbrush-looking, design that does admittedly look a great deal like what AI images look like. And so, when this was featured on, one of Sony's official YouTube channel, or PlayStation's official YouTube channel, they got a ton of backlash. To the point where they got with the artists that they hired to make this art and had her send them basically a video of her going through the Photoshop layers, being like, no, this is actually something I made, and released a video of that to try to, head some of that off. And as you might imagine, there are elements of the internet that, refuse to believe it. Like, well, but we didn't see her actually physically draw it.
Yeah, I think that this is another just negative and predictable effect of AI being fucking everywhere and everybody being paranoid. The annoying side of this, and I've talked about this on, Blue Sky, is you start getting people who kind of consider any computer assisted drawing or art to be AI.
Yep.
And I put this firmly at the feet of AI companies, because they're marketing everything as fucking AI.
Oh yeah.
And it's you get people saying, well, this doesn't count because you used layers or something like that. And yeah, I think that it's a bad environment for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who's gotten way more familiar with Photoshop than I ever thought I would, so much of it is this button is just a form of AI. And it's a very specific, thing that I'm asking the AI to do, smear or brush or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is at the end of the day, that where to draw that line gets really, really sticky.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, sucks for that developer and sucks for everybody that is the environment that we're just going to live in for the rest of our fucking lives.
I feel bad for the artist who, on top of, having to scramble to not get canceled, has to live with the knowledge that, man, your art is the most AI thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not her.
I think part of the problem.
That's fair.
I think part of the problem is there's a specific look that AI has kind of zeroed in on. And it's there's nothing innately wrong with that look. It just happens to be the one that AI has kind of gravitated towards.
Yep.
Like, I was doing something recently. Apparently, there's, like, certain words that AI tends to overuse. So now if you're someone who uses those words, you're likely to get accused of your writing being AI.
Yeah, and M dashes, like, there's punctuation that AI uses that people don't tend to naturally do. Yeah. Sucks. Sucks. I hate
Jen. Jen is a huge MDAS abuser, so sucks for her.
Oh, it's great. I love MDASHes. Anything that, you know, puts rhythm into writing.
Dennis, are you sure you are not married to a robot?
I mean, at the very least, a bionic woman. I would make the argument of a cyborg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Let's see, Jala, I'm interested in the story about Reluted.
Yeah, so I came across this and it looks really neat. Reluted is a 2D heist game where you are robbing museums and returning the artifacts to their original countries. It's developed and published by Nyamakop. The demo is available on Steam, but the game is not out yet. So in this game, the protagonist team gets together when they find out that a museum is hiding their ownership of several different antiques, not even using the reason of public education, just kind of keeping them hidden away, which opens them to not having a place to report the theft of said artifacts to in the event of a loss.
Man.
The dev only uses real-world examples of items that countries are seeking to reclaim from museums which have them, and they brought on full-time researchers and 3D modelers for all of these very real artifacts from Africa where, you know, like they're referencing them in the game. And each of the different levels is a series of rooms that have their own entrances and exits and potential hazards to blocking your way out, like shutters that threaten to close as soon as the alarms go off. And before the heist begins, players decide where and how the team should be distributed. Should you put the acrobat on the roof, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And once the player grabs all one of the artifacts, the alarms go off and then the escape begins. And anyway, the story also promises to expand with not only interesting new heists, but BioWare style choices along the way to shape the story.
Yeah. I mean, I love a heist, and if it can be morally justified, then fuck yeah.
Yeah. And the only thing better than a heist is planning a heist. So I'm glad to hear that features.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. It is a cool concept for a game.
Is there was another one of like just stealing back artifacts that I remember was specifically was like an Afrofuturist kind of vibe. And I don't know if this is the same game or a similar one, but that's neither here nor there.
I can't recall.
Know.
Be funny if there was like a glut of steal back the artifact games.
Let's see. And Dennis, what's going on with your story?
Yeah. So, there are rumors and excitement swirling around of a beloved Xbox franchise making a resurgence. So, you know, they're always teasing, new stuff coming, the studio, it's now Halo Studios. It used to be 343. They teased saying that they're going to be showcasing all these new games and the return of a classic that's been with us since the beginning. Which, that's right, everyone. Brute Force is getting a reboot. in all likelihood, this is a reboot of Halo or something equivalent that they have been teasing. But the like chatter around this got so intense that they had to clarify because people were getting all hot and bothered. I guess the Halo World Championship is coming up, which didn't know that was a thing. But they said, you know, people are wondering whether or not it's going to be worth playing worth coming to the championship, essentially as like, well, if you're announcing something new and big, I'll be there. If you're just kind of, you know, if it's more marketing jargon, I'm going to sit this one out. So they have clarified that they are going to come with a big announcement. Haven't said what exactly that is, but expect big news from Halo coming in October.
Cool.
Woot.
Yeah. Huh. But yeah, when a Halo Studios starts teasing something new coming, there's a pretty safe bet that it's going to be Halo related.
Yeah, I liked your brute force joke. That was funny.
No, thank you. Thank you. I pride myself.
I would love to see another one of, what was the Halo they made where you're not playing as a Spartan? You're like one of the soldiers?
ODST. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see them do more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a neat game. Well, that sounds like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 549. We appreciate you taking the time. I'll be real quick with our calls to action. Please consider leaving us a rating or review, telling a friend, supporting us on Patreon. All of that does help us out. Jala, what is going on at Jala's place?
Yeah, so the last episode was on Shining Force 3, the final episode about Shining Force 3. Mm-hmm. So that is in all wrapped up and done finally after a while. And the one that drops on the same day that this episode drops is going to be with Three Sails Studios to talk about Mappamundi, but also their upcoming new game, Gallows Corner. So these are TTRPGs. And I've had George from Three Sails on previously, and now I'm having him on again to kind of update about the new thing.
Hmm. Sounds like they have a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And where can people find that?
At jalachan.place.
Cool. I have been K Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at k.zone.
I have been sneezing and on mute, so I'll come back from that. Whew. I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie. You can find me with way too many fireworks this weekend.
And I'm Jala Chan in all the places I may be found.
And stick around for some titles. All right,
just leave the quiet.
I'm not going to fucking disconnect the call and do it again. I have no idea what it is. So everybody, really listen in for Jala here.
Yeah, Jala, you got to scream your recommendations.
Accidentally on fire. One title.
Okay, one title is accidentally on fire. Okay.
Another one is lawn gnome based superpowers.
All right.
The end.
The end. Okay. I don't have any. Moxie, how about you?
I had Stop Being Able to Start, and I had Jank is Not a Disqualifier.
Okay. All right. And Dennis, what you have?
I also had Stop Being Able to Start. I also had Mannequins Have Souls.
Mannequins have souls. I like accidentally on fire.
Yeah, that fits the MO.
Yeah.
So, get behind that.
Any objections?
No.
All right.
And now my freaking volume comes back.
I've got no idea what that is. I'm really sorry if that
affected anything.
Oh, it is decided.